Major David Cass, thank you for coming in early, and we wanted to talk about what has gone on over the weekend in Israel. It's been a horrific, horrific week for people in Israel. 650 rockets fired at civilians, just indiscriminately at civilians. Of course, the citizens of Gaza are paying the price as well.
If you could just put that number into perspective quickly. I mean, it's a massive bombardment. 600 rockets over what, 48 hours?
Yeah,
48 hours, even 72 hours.
No, it's less than that, because it started, I think, on Saturday morning.
And
the ceasefire went into effect at 4:30 a.m.
How many
this morning.
Is it per hour? I mean, it's
a couple of rockets every 3 minutes
That's totally disruptive. I mean, you can see that this is something, this is a big bombardment. It's nothing small.
Right. In fact, I saw that number, but I'm going to, I'll find it for you right now.
There's a couple of other numbers while you're having a look here. Is that 150 rockets were intercepted apparently by the Iron Dome. We've spoken about that before.
Yes, yes.
Where the Iron Dome chooses which rocket it's going to take on. But obviously, due to the swarming tactics, some of them did get through.
I mean, here we go. Avi Meir on Twitter saying 600 rockets in 30 hours, an average of one rocket every 3 minutes. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis within rocket range, and 10,000 of families huddled in bomb shelters since yesterday morning. Yeah. He goes on to say that no other country would tolerate this, which of course is absolutely right.
Yeah.
So, but I don't really, maybe from a strategy point of view, you could explain. I don't understand how this works. This started on Saturday morning. Mm. It was very, very much a coordinated attack. You don't just launch 600 rockets in 30 hours without this being very, very organized.
Very well planned, very well organized.
And very well planned.
Planned ahead.
Exactly. So this was always going to happen.
Yes.
This was obviously a strategy.
Yes.
And then we reach an agreement, and then it stops, and what? Everybody goes back to normal. Are any lessons learned? Is there a – I mean, why – I get why everybody wants a ceasefire, because ceasefires mean – no more people die. But it doesn't really. It actually only means no more people die today.
Today, correct. Yeah.
You know, to me, it doesn't mean no more people die. Surely there's got to be some form of resolution. And stopping it like this, just when it starts to get too close maybe for comfort, is it a good thing? I don't know. I'd love your thoughts.
Well, you know what? It's interesting to try and understand the objectives of the parties when something like this happens. It'll make it easier to understand why the ceasefires happen and what the end game is. We look at it from a Hamas point of view.
Yeah.
You would say to yourself, why does a military power that is so outclassed by the next door neighbor actually undertake these ventures? Because they've got no hope of winning these battles. I mean, they don't have a hope of winning these battles.
Right.
So what is the objective behind this?
Mm-hmm.
It's not to win a war. They fully understand that that's not going to happen. It's purely designed as a psychological method to disrupt people's daily lives. To wage psychological warfare. I believe 50% of the kids in those areas have got post-traumatic stress syndrome, etc. So from that point of view, certainly they are achieving the objective. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This has disrupted Israel and it continues to disrupt.
And it's about maybe, I don't know if it is about Eurovision, but people are might be nervous to come, even though they're not there. We're seeing people going. It's Israel's Independence Day celebrations later this week. Is it all about that, do you think,
It could be. It could have a longer term objective of disrupting that also, but certainly it just disrupts life on the border of Israel. But not only on the border, I took a little graph of where these rockets can reach. By the way, most of these rockets are homemade, according to blueprints sent by Iran.
Right.
Quite sophisticated stuff, and there's different rockets, and they've got different ranges. And the ones that...
Sorry, just go back there. According to blueprints sent by Iran.
Yes.
So these are definitely Iran supported.
Well, a lot of the rockets are from blueprints.
Right.
From Iran. Homemade. Based on these blueprints. Certainly Iran must be.
No, well, we do know that as well yesterday, because Israel took out the Hamas finance person who was responsible for the flow of money between Iran and Hamas. So we do know that.
Absolutely. So the longest range rocket, I mean, these rockets range from 3 kilometers up to 200 kilometers, which can reach anywhere in Israel.
Yeah, that's far.
So there's this problem. I mean, obviously they haven't loosed these the bigger ones off at this stage.
Yeah,
but they've always got that capability, which is a warrior.
And they did threaten it. They kept threatening.
They keep threatening it.
The you know, the nuclear site near Ben Gurion. They've threatened it.
Absolutely.
Constantly.
So they have the capability of doing that. So it's a disruptive strategy. They're looking to.
But yet they know that. That at the end of the day, the other countries, such as Egypt, maybe Saudi Arabia, I'm not sure who, will make sure that Israel reaches a ceasefire with them. So let me ask you this. Who's won this round?
Difficult to say. I mean, what are the objectives? Let's work on objectives. What was the objective of Hamas on this attack? First of all, we discussed the first one was disruptive. Did they succeed in disrupting Israel? They definitely did it.
They brought Israel to a standstill over 2 days.
Absolutely. Second objective was probably is to keep this hot in the news. Keep the whole Gaza, West Bank, Palestinian situation in the news right up front there. Have they succeeded in doing that? Certainly, they've kept it on the world stage.
Right.
So they've achieved that objective. So I would say they've achieved their objective.
Do you think I think the third one they didn't achieve, and that is creating sympathy for the Palestinian or Gaza cause, because it was so flagrant, and it's very, very difficult for anybody to stand up in defense of Hamas or Gaza at this point. Of course, everybody just remains silent.
There's been a perceptible change of attitude. Even in the last incident me and you were discussing, there's certainly been a perceptible change of attitude. I won't say things are swinging in Israel's favor.
No, most definitely not. I mean, you're not going to have the South African government, for example, coming out and saying, you know, Hamas needs to behave and not fire at civilian targets.
I think Hamas has got a staunch supporters that will always be behind it no matter what.
And won't see it
Those that are sitting on the fence, some of the sympathy is starting to swing Israel's way, certainly on an incident like this. I mean, this is absolutely just blatant and uncalled for, and you can see it's been planned. And it broke a ceasefire. So there is. I don't think they were 100% successful if that was their objective.
Right. It normally is, because they normally, you know, one of the terrible things about Hamas, and I don't understand why this is ignored completely, is that the people that are most oppressed by Hamas are the citizens of Gaza. Are the Palestinians. They suffer under Hamas more than anybody. And in fact, we even saw a shift. There's a news agency called Gaza, I think it's called Gaza News, which is very, of course, quite, as you'd expect, anti-Israel, very, very much anti-Israel. But I saw during the course of the reporting on this particular event over this weekend, highly critical of Hamas. But more so than I have ever seen, and saying, you know, the people of Gaza need to be freed from Hamas. And we are starting to see that coming through. We're seeing the protests. People might not, many organizations might not want to report on it because they can't really make sense of this.
Well, they're not delivering on the most important thing, which is to provide people with jobs, education, safety, and health. I mean, they're just not providing that.
And if you can launch 650 rockets, it means you've got a certain amount of money. It doesn't come for free. So that money is being used for terror, and that is used, you know, it literally goes up in smoke rather than that money being used for hospitals and education and betterment.
Well, the whole policy there is just not conducive to practicing good economics.
Because it's not interested in it. It's not a value.
Well, absolutely. And that must be, there must be a lot of people in Gaza that just want to live in a peaceful situation and
life. I'm sure most.
I'm sure the majority, guaranteed. Yeah, they need to find a voice, surely.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult situation. Unfortunately, because the world, and in the world I include the South African government, has chosen such a simplistic narrative of the conflict, it lacks such nuance that the people of Gaza get forgotten along the way, because if everything that comes from that side of the border is okay, then, and we can't examine critically what Hamas is doing, then I think obviously the people that suffer most are the citizens of Gaza.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can't take a one-dimensional approach to a three-dimensional problem.
Right.
And a lot of what's going on is rhetoric. A lot of it is propaganda. And perhaps this government's bought into a lot of that. I mean, they obviously identify with liberation movements. movements and the struggles. I can understand that. But certainly, as you say, it lacks nuance and a deep understanding of what the problem is. And also, once you've withdrawn, you're not a player anymore, which is totally unfortunate. You know, I think we could have played a massive role in that situation. And now, once you've withdrawn, there's no more role to be played, which is an absolute pity at the end of the day. You know, to win the lotto, you've got to buy a ticket. You know, so it's a pity. It's a pity that we pulled out of that situation. I think we could have helped it.
No question. No question.
I think there's excesses on both sides. I don't doubt that in any war situation you're going to get that.
Right.
But it needs statesmanship, either within those two countries, or it needs outside intervention. It has a bit of statesmanship, a bit of leadership at the end of the day to take this into hand.
And credibility, of course.
And credibility. And to find a way forward. A very, very difficult situation that's not going to be solved for the foreseeable future. And which brings us back to the point. So what is going to happen here? What is the end game? I mean, we know this is going to happen again. There's no doubt about it.
I just want to put the question to listeners, and I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. A ceasefire has been reached in Israel as of 4:30 a.m. this morning. Is it a good thing or is it not a good thing? I'm not going to say a bad thing because it can never be a bad thing if rockets stop flying and people stop getting hurt or killed. So it can never be a bad thing. But is it actually a good thing? Is it going to serve a purpose? Because as you're saying, David, does anybody really think that this is it? Well, we've reached a ceasefire. Everybody can get on with their lives, and we'll never need to revisit this again. Never.
No, look. Certainly, I think it's a good thing for the short term. Obviously, I mean, right. if there's a stop to the loss of life, I mean, I think it's great. I think what you're asking me is, are the Israelis stopping it too soon before they've imposed some type of a solution? I think that's really what you're saying to me at the end of the day. I mean, why call for a ceasefire? Why not do something? You know. It's difficult. What can they do? Short of going in there, putting boots on the ground.
I think it was very close. I'm pretty sure it was very close.
But they're very hesitant. I mean, you can see that. I mean, this is.
Yes, because when you put boots on, I mean, I don't need to tell you your business, but when you put boots on the ground, that's when civilians get killed.
Well, that's when soldiers get killed.
And
we're talking about a lot of soldiers being killed. I mean, I have no doubt about it. You're talking about an urban situation. One of the worst forms of warfare is an urban situation. Just think Stalingrad and places like that. It's a messy, messy business. And lots of soldiers are going to be killed and wounded. And I'm sure they're very reluctant to go in there and do something. But how do you put an end to the launch sites and the thousands of tunnels that these guys have dug and hiding the factories and the launch sites? You need to put boots on the ground to go in there, but they're obviously very reluctant to take that step. So that's what you're asking me, you're saying to me, is it, all we're doing is just delaying this. In a couple of weeks' time, we're going to have the same situation again. Hamas is in possession of 5,000 to 6,000 rockets. So they've loosed off 10% of their arsenal.
Which is nothing.
So they have the capability of doing this again tomorrow.
It might not be a fair question, but do you have any sense of what each rocket costs?
I think a good question is, what do their rockets cost compared to the Iron Dome system?
So that I know. I don't know the numbers, but I do know that this is on some level it's an economic war. Because it costs Israel a fortune.
These are rough and ready cheap munitions.
Right, but if you've got 5,000 or 6,000 of them,
the money could have been better spent elsewhere. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but there's no comparison in sending over a couple of $100 missile and getting it knocked down by a million dollar Iron Dome missile. I mean, you're not going to win the economic war.
No, for sure.
And they know what they're doing with that. These are cheap, ready, made in the backyard.
I also keep thinking about the people of Iran because they are suffering tremendously.
Sure.
And this is where their money is going. And can you imagine living in a country, well, I suppose we can. Can you imagine living in a country where your leadership cares so little for you economically that they're prepared to just spend money on all sorts of causes?
Well, look, this goes to a deeper psychological problem. I mean, it's the difference between having a purpose and embracing an ideology. You know, if you don't have a purpose, It's a thing of last resort, you know. If you don't have a purpose, you're going to embrace an ideology. So that's what's happening here. A lot of these people don't have jobs. They don't have an economic future. They don't see a future. So they embrace an ideology, and that's where it gets, that's where it gets dangerous.
Right.
Because once you've embraced that ideology, I mean, you give up on anything else. The ideology is your home, and you're going to put your weight behind.
Yeah,
that.
You almost can't even go in another direction because you don't have the option.
There's nothing to lose
in your mind.
So the problem with this whole thing is that it's a strategy of last resort, is it not? It's nihilistic.
I'm not sure because I think the perception is that, and to some extent that becomes a defense. So when, and I have no doubt that that goes on. I have no doubt that somebody in the South African government who thought, well, maybe we should say to Hamas, don't do this, is rationalizing it by saying, well, at the end of the day, what choice do they have?
No, you've got a lot of choices.
Of course they do.
Even in this country, there were a lot
of
choices.
But I'm saying that's why it's a dangerous thing to say last resort. It isn't last resort.
To a lot of people, it is. They've embraced the ideology. And to them, this is the ideology that they need to. We spoke about the time frame also. That the Western way of thinking is in a couple of weeks. These people are thinking centuries ahead. You know, they think the contribution that they're going to do now may only manifest in 100 years' time. So they're happy to do that. It's a different way of thinking.
Right.
So this is what makes it dangerous. And it's important in winning these type of wars, these asymmetrical wars, it's important to understand how the enemy thinks, to put yourself in his feet, and not only to apply military solutions. You have to do a military, you have to apply a military solution, but you have to look at a hell of a lot of other things in your toolbox
but isn't that what keeps happening? Is it's all military. So we have these 600 and something rockets being fired at Israel in 30 hours. Then that's military. Then we have the ceasefire.
Yes.
And, which is good, but, I'm not sure that I think it's good, but I don't think it's great. Because unless you're coming up with some form of a solution, we know, as you said, that this is going to happen again. That's why I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. I see that everyone's quite reluctant to get involved in this conversation. Maybe it's too difficult, or maybe we're too conflicted, because we do want a ceasefire. We do want people on both sides of the border to stop dying.
I think so.
But on the other hand, I'm not sure that a ceasefire is the smartest thing right now. Benjamin says, hi, about the ceasefire, I'm under the impression that these Hamas terrorists have previously declared one, but then almost immediately go and break it with further attacks. Please let me know if I'm wrong, hopefully. You are wrong. You are right, unfortunately. Yeah, you're not wrong. We've seen this over and over again. The ceasefire might not be broken today, but in 4 days' time,
or six days' time, or whenever it is,
this will be repeated. There's no doubt about that.
No doubt about it, no.
But David, during the break, you were saying to me that these rockets that are coming across from Hamas, Iranian designed, it seems to be Iranian funded. You didn't say that. That seems to be from the message, the news that I'm reading. But they lack any form of guidance. Is that right?
These are aerial weapons that were designed to be fired in salvos, massive salvos. Invented almost by the Russians back in the Second World War, and they were area weapons. So they were used to saturate large amount of areas. They have no guidance whatsoever, and it's pretty much a hit and miss affair. When you fire them in huge salvos, they've got the effect of carpet bombing a certain area.
Right.
When you fire them one at a time, they can have. I mean, they can be out by 10, 15 kilometers. You don't know where they're going to land at the end of the day. So, if I use my crystal ball. A future threat, a serious threat now, is that Hamas acquires more precision-type weapons. And what I'm thinking of is this drone, the drones that are now becoming very prolific in the military. And drones are not a huge technology. You can go into one of these little toy shops and go buy a guided drone with precision, and you can guide them with precision. I mean, it's a frightening prospect if you think about it at the end of the day. So it doesn't take much to upgrade this so that it will take a payload And then with precision, you can guide us onto a certain area. So this is definitely a threat that's going to manifest in the future.
But therefore, again, doesn't that lead credence or credibility to the fact that Israel shouldn't be accepting a ceasefire now? Because the more that the Hamas terror infrastructure is damaged, the harder it is for them to claw back. Surely a ceasefire at this point, although positive from a lack of loss of the fact that people aren't going to be dying in the next few days, actually is a short-term gain but a long-term potential loss.
I think, Howard, we've got to get away from the mindset that this is winnable. I don't believe it's winnable on either side. I just don't believe it's winnable. So what would be the Israeli objective? And it's not only Israel. I mean, in a lot of situations, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, or whatever the situation is, all over the world, where we're faced with these type of problems, the new type of asymmetrical warfare, what would be the objective? Is to have a situation that you can manage, to bring it down into manageable levels. You're not going to win this. You're going to be able to try and manage a situation that becomes livable. That's your objective. You're never going to stop this. Eventually, there may be a peace settlement down the line, many, many years ahead or whatever the situation. But now, for the short term, not winnable. So you have to do everything you can to make us to manage under these circumstances. That's about the best that you can do, unfortunately. It's not a great prognosis.
So therefore, would you, given the circumstances, would you think that a ceasefire right now is the way to go?
I think it's what the people can bear. I think it's what the Israelis can bear. I think they will come to a stage where they can bear it no longer. Or they may not come to that stage, but they will send the message to say that this is unbearable.
Yeah, that we don't want this anymore.
We need to do something about it. But then, then maybe it'll solve it for the medium term. You're not going to solve the situation. That's what I'm saying to you. That this needs a political settlement at the end of the day. It's going to have to be settled in a political way, not in a military way. And the best that they can do at this stage of the game is to try and manage the situation as best as possible to make life livable under this threat on a daily basis. Unfortunate, not an easy thing to
especially because I don't believe you yet have a situation that Hamas accepts that Israel has a right to exist.
No.
So once you're working with a party that wants one party who wants peace and the other who wants you annihilated, if you don't become a strong power, you will be annihilated. You have no choice. I think Lord Jonathan Sacks speaks about that. He gives an example of let's say 5 or 6 tribes. I don't remember exactly the number living alongside each other, and one becomes aggressive and militant. And he gives different examples of each one and how they can deal with it. The one tribe runs away, so they say far away. They just get out of there. The other tries to make peace, but the one doesn't want peace, so they get destroyed. You know, and ultimately, the only one that is going to survive is the one that becomes almost more militant than they are and stronger than they are, because otherwise they will be annihilated. So Israel has no choice. We know that. Yes. The problem is that until Hamas accepts that Israel has a right to exist, how do you ever negotiate with somebody who says in their charter that they will hunt you down under every rock and they will find you and they will kill you?
You can't really negotiate with something
like that. It's hard. What are you negotiating?
No, you can't at the end of the day. I don't believe they want to sit down and negotiate. But I'm worried about...
The people of Gaza might.
The people of Gaza might. That's what we spoke about. So maybe you wage this type of war on a political front also to try and get a regime change there, to try and allow the people to have a government that represents their true wishes. That's another strategy, and I'm sure that's what's going through Israelis' mind, and they're trying their best to try and do that. I'm sure the Americans also trying to assist that type of thing. Not an easy situation. And no real short term. And that's why I don't think too many people are phoning in yet. There's a lot of emotion involved in this. And there's no real solutions.
Almost hopelessness. Well, Clive says, where will it end? And Mike says, Hamas has no peace plan, never has, never will. Ceasefire is always a way of restocking time. Each short conflict is just a test of new equipment and how far they can push Israel.
A valid point. I think that's a valid point. Right. I do believe that. And
so, what do you think? I mean, we do have to wrap this up. But what do you think? Do you think that, I mean, you've told us what you think. It's a short term. It's a short term ceasefire.
I think it's dangerous to, with a winner take all type of a situation. Yeah. I mean, where would I like to see this go? Whenever. I would like to see this come to some type of a negotiated settlement. I mean, it's impossible now. I mean, you can see you can't negotiate with people who don't want to negotiate, but that's the only solution. It can't be a winner takes all. I don't think the Israelis are going anywhere, and I don't think the Palestinians are going anywhere. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to live together under some type of a settlement.
I'm always scared of that comment because I don't think that Hamas represents all Palestinians.
No, absolutely not.
So I think
I agree with you with that. And I don't even know if the Palestinian, the West Bank regime represents all Palestinians. I don't believe that either.
Oh, I love they this. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting you because I've just got a message that I absolutely love. Ha ha. Well, haven't we had enough already? Let the mothers of both sides take charge and both sides will lay down arms.
Yeah, that's a nice thought.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the mothers on the one side are not just as militant as everybody else. Well, I've seen some pretty scary things.
Oh, come on. Can't we have our moment of
a
rainbow moment?
That's
there.
A rainbow moment.
Lindy, you took it away from
me. That's a beautiful
thought. I know. And even the studio is becoming so much happier.
It was like there was a warm glow from that message.
And
then
Major Katz just took it away.
He took it away. He stole it from me. All right. That's where we love and leave you, Major David Katz. Thank you for coming in so early to deal with a very, very thorny and difficult issue. Indeed, it is.